Welcome again to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On, clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. Xander will do the honors and introduce our guest.
Hello, everybody. Our guest today is Sharon Ellison. Sharon is the author of Taking the War Out of Our Words, and she's also the creator of the Powerful Non-Defensive Communication Process, which is a revolutionary approach to eliminating defensiveness. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Thank you so much. I'm honored.
Absolutely. I shouldn't say always, because sometimes I forget, but I do like to tell the listener when I know a guest, how I know them. Sharon, we met in either 2002 or 2003 when I was a seminary student at Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, California. And I went to a training that was in your beautiful home in Oakland, California over the course of a weekend to learn powerful non-defensive communication. I acquired a copy of your book, Taking the War Out of Our Words, the CD collection, which is really helpful. That's one of the things you stressed in your training, was that being able to actually hear the way that a question or statement is phrased, the tone of it, that's really important. And so I'm hoping that we're going to get into some of the nitty-gritty about powerful non-defensive communication. I'd really like to start, though, with having you tell us, where did this idea come from for powerful non-defensive communication?
When I graduated from college, my first job was in a detention center. And I was very aware of all the different ways people were communicating. And there was quite a bit of conflict. And that conflict, it could go between some of the people that were working there with the kids. I kept thinking about communication, like what is the role of verbal communication in human beings in our lives. I started teaching a class at the Downtown Athletic Club in Eugene, but it was a small college in Eugene, Oregon.
A community college, or what we used to call junior college.
Yeah, something like that. So something happened, and I'm eternally curious. I don't know why I never asked anybody a question about this, but different people who didn't know each other would leave when I would be teaching some of my ideas that I was developing about what I call PNDC, or the Powerful Non-Defensive Communication Process. And multiple people who did not know each other would give me the same exact sentence. This is so revolutionary and disarming. And I kept hearing that. And life is strange, you know, because I'm eternally curious. And I never asked anybody, well, what do you mean by that? One day I just went home and sat down and I thought, well, what am I teaching that's disarming? And so I stopped to think about what are our core verbal forms of communication that we have as human beings. And I thought first about asking questions. We ask questions. Second, we also talk to people and we tell them how we feel and what our opinions are. And third, I thought, well, we also give feedback to other people. We may be doing it to support them, or we may do it for other reasons. And then the final one that I came up with was predicting consequences. When we need to create a situation maybe that's working better, so we predict certain consequences if the person behaves in a certain way or doesn't behave in that way. I took those four pieces, and I'm going to backtrack for a second, because before I came up with those on my own, I decided I was going to look them up in the dictionary and see how they were defined. The first word that I looked up was the word question. I'm ADD. I don't hold on to individual words all the time. But what happened was when I read it, I never forgot these four words: doubt, mistrust, interrogation, and torture during a trial. And those were the four definitions of the word question in the human language.
Wow.
And to this day, Merriam-Webster still has torture listed as a synonym for the word question. And I have still never seen any dictionary that defined the word question with the word curiosity, which for me was the heart of good, healthy curiosity, wanting to learn, wanting to know. Then I went through the others. And in every case, the way that people were defining these four words didn't have any ounce of reciprocity to them. Giving feedback was like judging somebody. Predicting consequences was, I'm going to punish you if you don't do what I say when I say it. And when we're saying our own opinions, often we want someone else. When I looked up some of the words, it showed that if you are having a conversation with someone and if you don't agree, then the person that wins the conflict, I guess you'd say, that person gets accolades about being a great, successful person. And the person that failed gets defining words like impotent And I loved your question, where did it come from? It was at that moment that something just hit me in the forehead. And I realized that we were inheriting the language of unilateral power rather than reciprocal power. And it was about 20 or 30 or 40 years later that I realized that I started writing something for an introduction to a piece I was writing. And I suddenly had the memory that, well, I had been a very, very young child when I heard a man say, it's just human nature to be violent. And I never knew what impact that thought I had, but that's more like being sick. That's not like being healthy. But that thought and that experience had completely left my conscious mind. And then it popped out when I was writing an introduction to something. While I was thinking about that, that's when I had been writing about how I believe the importance of asking a question. And we have typically come up at the end of the question in the English language. I'm not well versed in other languages. What made you say that? You come up, you frown, and that prompts the other person's defensive mechanism. I come down at the end of the question instead. What was it that made you say that just now? People who've been using the PNDC skill sets, I have over 100 examples in my book from people that have used them. Up until now, we had not been able, because there's a group of about 25 people in US and Canada who have worked to help spread PNDC, and it has spread across Canada and to Italy and to other places. The idea suddenly came to me that what was happening was that we were inheriting a kind of communication where one person has control over another, or one nation has control over another. And for me, that was a pretty strong representation of why human beings have not been able to come to a place where we use reciprocal power consistently, which is certainly much more productive, much healthier than the war model. And I recently read an article about a test they gave high school and college kids, and over 60% of those kids still believe that it's human nature to be violent. And that's recent.
Yeah.
And in my book, what I wrote was that I believe that power struggle was actually the most pervasive. Well, let me backtrack one more second before I go on with that. Because if, in fact, it is just human nature to be violent, then power struggle is irrevocable. We can't get rid of it, right? I mean, there would be no way to get rid of power struggle if we are inherently violent. What I wrote in my book was that I believe that power struggle was actually the most pervasive and least recognized addiction on earth. And I wrote that book in 1998, and it is still selling very well on Amazon. Scientists have now proven what I wrote in 1998. The minute a person gets defensive, then the chemistry in the brain shifts and it becomes like that of an addicted person, like addicted to alcohol or addicted to drugs. So if you think about that, when people are addicted, I mean, that often leads to violence in families and everywhere. Am I answering your question about—
Yeah, let me just inquire a little bit more into that. So the brain responds in a similar manner if they feel they need to go on the defensive to addiction, but not to fight or flight. It's a slightly different pathway towards an addiction response versus a fight or flight stress response, or maybe the same thing.
I think the chemistry of the brain when you're addicted, I think the person is often not functioning in a reciprocal way. They want what they want. And when they're addicted, when they're drinking their alcohol or smoking their dope or whatever they're doing, that's when, say, even a family member or a friend makes some benign comment. And then they're like, what the F do you know, then the person is moving right into attack because of what's happening inside of the brain. Am I answering your question correctly?
Yeah, now it makes sense to me. Not fully, because it sounds very complicated. The first thought that I have when I hear this is it's a person becoming reactive to another person, like a person who has an addiction, because they're very self-focused or self-oriented. My thoughts are maybe it's shame. That's all the psychology of it, but that's where my brain goes. I'm like, ooh, why are they doing that? We don't really need to dig into it. But when I first learned about powerful non-defensive communication, I was a bit resistant to it because I had studied nonviolent communication with Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, and I had been trained to be a facilitator of that style of communication. And so I was pretty committed to it. I had also just Right before I went to seminary, I had just completed a master's of science in conflict analysis and resolution. And I had spent 3.5 days with Johann Galtung, who is considered the grandfather of the peace studies movement or field of discipline. And he has this conflict transcendence model. And so there was a place in me that recognized that this powerful non-defensive communication had something. And I'm so grateful that I was made aware of powerful non-defensive of communication by a professor of mine in seminary, and that I was open enough to be curious enough to sign up for the workshop, that I wasn't resistant to it. And I think it's because I had had enough exposure to different ways of looking at how to resolve, manage, transform, transcend, and mitigate conflict, that I knew there couldn't just be one way, because, well, it depends on the circumstances,
yes,
the context, the person. Right? You can't just have one way of dealing with conflict and use it in all circumstances. Right?
I wanted to get back to your comment about addiction, because in addiction, we know there's disconnection. There's
yes.
no connection.
Yes.
And we also know that when people disconnect and they start to take on behaviors, those behaviors become patterns. So when you mentioned that in these moments when people are not communicating in a healthy way and they resort to a pattern that they're accustomed to, it's not necessarily aiding them in any healthy way. Now it's a pattern. So that makes sense, that it's a
yeah.
form of addiction.
Yes, yes. And the scientists, one of the other places were called PNDC. One of the things that the scientists have said consistently is that it takes X amount of time for the adrenaline rush to dissipate when you have a conflict. And out of those 100 stories in my book, there is not a single person who went through that need for the time frame for the adrenaline rush to go away. In every one of those cases, and I can tell you some stories if you want to hear them, but in every one of those cases, the person has stopped whatever was happening within a matter of seconds, with no needed time lapse for the adrenaline rush. And I finally found some information. For some reason, information sometimes just jumps out at me. I wasn't even looking for it. But I found some information that explains exactly how and why PNDC can diffuse defensiveness in a matter of seconds. That again shows that even some of the science, it hasn't been quite on track. With some of the last pieces of information I've gotten, the whole group that I work with is very excited, because now we could set up two rooms. One room the way someone would usually respond if there was a conflict, and then a PNDC room. Now we have enough data to show exactly how and why PNDC skill sets can diffuse the defensiveness instantly. And that includes violence. I've had people stop a rape with a single PNDC question. I've had kids stop bullies forever, even somebody that's regularly been bullying them. And the kids learn way faster. I have never done a training for kids in school, which includes kids in kindergarten all the way through college. I didn't have, well, the college professors called me sometimes too, telling me about the change in them. But the instant change, I mean, by the next day, some administrator would call me and say, the kids are practicing already. They don't have to necessarily put in so much effort to get rid of that frown. Like, well, what do you mean by that? But for the rest of us who are older and we're used to shrugging and shaking our head when something doesn't make sense to us, then that's still prompting the defensive reaction in the other person. The kids are really amazing. And one little girl, her mother was a vice chancellor at UCSF Medical School. I used to do a lot of work there when I lived in the Bay Area. And her 10-year-old daughter had been bullied every day on the bus by this boy. Are you okay for a story or two?
Absolutely.
Okay. Her daughter had been bullied on the bus by this boy every day. And she had heard me speak at a conference. And so she helped her daughter. She didn't take an example I used, but she actually implemented the changes I recommend and gave her daughter a question to ask the boy on the bus. And the daughter and this little 10-year-old is like, well, okay, mom, I don't know if it'll do any good. And she goes off to school and comes home that night and is like, mom, it was like really weird. I mean, I did just like you asked. And I just said, do you think I want you to talk to me that way? And he looked at me really funny and he squinted and he backed up and he said, well, no, I guess not. And he never said a word.
Wow.
I was invited back to the same conference a year later The mother saw me and came and told me that he never bullied her again. One question. And a second example that I find to be very powerful also is another mother had her daughter call her one day right after she'd heard me speak. And the daughter said, "Mom, I don't know what to do." She, I guess, had been out of college recently. "My supervisor's been putting his arm around me. And today I bent over to pick up a box and he patted me on the bottom. What am I going to do?" Typical, "I don't want to go to HR. I don't want to quit my job." And that mother came up with a question. And I actually heard her story before I heard the other woman's story. But she told me that she'd helped her daughter think of a question, and her daughter called her back and said, "Mom, I did just exactly what you told me to do. And I just asked him, 'Do you think I want you to touch me that way?' And he stared at me for a minute, and then he said, 'No. And I can see I've humiliated you, and I'll never do it again.'" Now, that's unheard of. I mean, we don't know. He could have lost his job. I mean, I don't know if you could get arrested for it or whatever, but it shows that the PNDC process can actually prompt people to take accountability and take responsibility and return to their own humanity in a way that's kinder and more effective.
What I found interesting is when Xander was asking about the fight or flight response, because we know in the hypothalamus and pituitary axis, which in some cases it spares us when our cortisol levels rise and it kicks in that negative feedback loop. And that negative feedback loop is what shuts off our temperature control. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me what you're saying, because if people are accustomed to operating on these high levels of cortisol, mm-hmm. they're reactive. Mm-hmm. And this process that you put into place where it teaches people in such a way that it sounds to me that cortisol level comes down, so that thermostat is effective. It's doing its job, what it needs to do. People are able to connect.
Yes, yes. And it takes 5 seconds for the complex problem-solving part of the brain to shut down once a person has been triggered. And so the amygdala grabs it and takes it to fight or flight. But fight and flight are both part of power struggle still, right? And so,
sure, yeah.
And so that has a huge impact. And I have a story that came to me when I got some information that went beyond this idea of the complex problem-solving part of the brain shutting down and the amygdala taking over and then fight, flight, and all of that happening. What I ran across was what I call the magic sixth second. And that is, if you can hold out for one single extra second, then the entire complex problem-solving part of the brain comes roaring back and the person can use their reasoning in a much more effective way. And it can be really transforming. And I have one story that is different from the others because of a particular thing, which is I was driving to California and I stopped at Mount Shasta, and about, oh, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning, it sounded like somebody was playing drums on the dryer and the people cleaning rooms were hollering back and forth on outside walkways. And so when I went in to check out, I said to the man behind the counter, "I want you to know that I know stuff happens and I try to be accommodating. And I need to say that this pretty much went beyond my limit." And he looked at me with the world's ugliest look. I've tried and tried to get my face to get as distorted as he was. But he goes, "What do you want? Part of your money back?" Then I asked him, "What's making you angry at me when I'm the person that was inconvenienced?" And he stopped and he never said another word. And he looked up and to the right. And I still, to this day, it's been, by now, it's got to be 50 years ago. I don't know. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I really should get walkie-talkies for the maids because they have to communicate back and forth when they're cleaning the rooms. Would you like half your money back?
Wow.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Sharon Ellison, who is the author of Taking the War Out of Our Words and creator of the powerful non-defensive communication process, also known by its acronym PNDC. Sharon has the 6-second intervention. Don't go away. We'll be back shortly after we play this commercial.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning. drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg, and our guest this hour is Sharon Allison. Let's get back to the show.
What was it again?
What's making you angry at me when I'm the person that was inconvenienced? The reason this example is so effective is because in the first round, I don't think he was reacting just to me. He had probably been having complaint after complaint after complaint. So he still responded in this extremely angry, ugly-looking way, not just because of what I said to him, but because of the fact that he's dealing with this every day and he's getting complaints every day. And people who are talking to him in the way like, what's the matter with you guys? I had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. They're out there screaming at each other or whatever. But since I stuck with my non-defensive downtone and then asked, what's making you angry at me when I'm the person that was inconvenienced? And he looks at me and in the kindest voice, after that extreme intensity, in the kindest voice said, would you like to have half your money back? And I told him no, because I wanted him to have that as something to remember and to go with. I didn't want to have him lose. I don't know if he was the owner or if he was just working there and he'd get in trouble or whatever. So I wanted to leave that alone.
It makes me think that pausing that you mentioned, that magic 6 second pause, that in prior encounters with previous guests, that anger, right, that defensiveness and that anger was stopping him from coming to a resolution. Mm-hmm. And so he could justify then just being angry.
Right.
Each time, mm-hmm. and then moving on so that the resolution isn't going to come. But right. when you pose your question the way you pose it, and it bypasses that defensive response, then he has access to his cognitive ability to think, oh, well, why are they noisy? Because they're having to communicate with each mm-hmm. other from a distance. And so you have to use a higher volume. Maybe if they had walkie-talkies,
yes.
but in prior encounters, that might not have come to him because it didn't need to. All he had to do was just become defensive and argumentative, and then people would probably just walk away displeased, and that would be the end of it.
Yes, yes. And that 6 second is, any other story wouldn't have shown this to happen because it was like two different realities. In the first reality, he's angry at me and he's expecting me to fight back and be angry. And so that's the unilateral power system. And the fact that I stayed out of that system and then just asked him a question in a kind way, then it allows the person who's hearing the story or even seeing something like that happen to realize that somebody can act absolutely in this mean, ugly way. But when you use a PNDC skill, when you come down at the end of that question, when you're not saying, hey, wait a minute, why are you angry at me? Then it helps that person just transform out of that war model, basically. And anytime anyone feels threatened for themselves, a family member, a friend, or even in politics, the politicians, political debate is absolutely, I'm trying to think of the right word here, it's not just outdated, it is dangerous. Because when two people are debating and one person says something and the other person gets angry and says, wait a minute, you're saying that you want people to be happy in this way or you want this or that, that's a good thing. But then why are you doing X, Y, and Z? The minute the person in the audience hears that, then they go to fight or flight to protect the person that is actually lying and instead of the person that's telling the truth. So to have that kind of back and forth in political debate is really, really anti-productive.
What do you make of today in the way people cancel one another?
Well, I think that withdrawal and withholding is also an aggressive act. It's an act to punish the other person. Fine. I had someone call me recently about a situation where that was exactly what was happening. That person was withholding and just refusing to discuss it, refusing to do anything, but being very rejecting. You know, the energy waves are, I'm rejecting you, I'm done with you. So I think I tend myself to think of it as that the silence and the withholding is actually an aggressive act. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Sharon,
yes.
The way something is being said is very important in PNDC. And the word choice may also be important. Let me test this. So when you said to the gentleman, what makes you angry, dot, 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 could you have also said...
Can I stop you? Because what you just did was what made you angry. The minute you emphasize the word made, you're going to prompt that defensive mechanism. I don't know if you were doing that intentionally or if you...
No, what did you say exactly then?
I said, what is it that's making you angry at me when I'm the person that was inconvenienced?
So what is it that's making you is not going to prompt in the same way as what makes you angry? What is it that's making you versus what makes?
No, it isn't the what makes, it was the emphasis you put on it.
Understood. Okay. So yeah, I'm not being careful with my words. I was trying to be careful with my words, but I wasn't paying attention to how I was saying them. So let me just say them however I say them, because I'm curious about the words specifically. What is making you angry versus why are you angry? Could you say both of those? Could your statement have started with either one of those, but in your particular PNDC style, or is one better than the other? Is starting a question with why immediately off the table or no?
I think I probably use what instead of why, because why didn't you get your homework done? Why didn't you get to work on time? Why didn't you? Why didn't you? Why didn't you? I think the word why itself is very much attached to unilateral power, where the person is being dominating. Why didn't you get your homework done on time? Or why were you late to work? That emphasis on the word why, I think, is very pervasive in the English language. And so that's part of what's making the impact. I hadn't thought about it before, but I probably do eliminate the word why. I had one woman who had won a contest, and there were a group of men who had all were getting to get something out of it. I don't remember what all those details were, but when they all met together for the first time, she was pregnant. And one of the men said, oh, I wouldn't have invested in this if I'd known you were going to be pregnant. And instead of saying, well, why do you think my being pregnant would have, with the emphasis on why? And she said instead, what was it that made you react that way when you told me you wouldn't have voted for me? He stopped dead cold and he said, oh my God, I have three daughters. I can't believe I said that to you. But if she had said, well, why are you saying that? I mean, what's that got to do with whatever, my intelligence or my work? Or so yeah, it's that tone of voice that prompts a really defensive reaction in other people. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I have another question. When in the beginning of our conversation, you had mentioned that individuals separate from each other had mentioned to you that the way that you spoke or the type of communication that you were demonstrating or teaching people was both disarming and revolutionary. And in my mind, there seems to be a contradiction there, or it can be perceived as a contradiction in the sense that revolutionary sounds warlike or militaristic, whereas even disarming does, because you're still talking about the taking away of arms, right? But I like this idea of taking the war out of our words is so difficult to remove that military type of language or violent oriented language from the way that we speak. When you hear the word revolutionary, does it have a similar resonance with you that it does with me, that it's like the Revolutionary War and revolutions are fought, right? Or does it not? Do you have another way of seeing something being revolutionary that doesn't have that quality?
Well, I want to look up the word revolutionary in all of the definitions right now. But in my mind, I guess, the word revolutionary has, I mean, sometimes a word can have multiple meanings. And so the Revolutionary War, that's war, but this is so revolutionary often is like, this is something new that we haven't experienced before. It's revolutionary in that it's something new and exciting or whatever. When they're using the word, when they say that to me, they're not looking like they're in war. they're looking like, wow, this is exciting, this is new. And so I've never stopped to question. Well, I did. I went home and sat in my living room and thought, now what am I teaching that's revolutionary? I think it would be interesting to look up the word revolutionary now and see if it has multiple.
I just did.
Yeah, you
I
did
just
too.
Did.
Yeah, on Merriam-Webster. Because that's the one you referenced earlier. So it's of relating to or constituting a revolution. And it gives an example, Revolutionary War, tending to or promoting revolution, a revolutionary movement or leader, constituting or bringing about a major or fundamental change, a revolutionary new product. It says of or relating to the American Revolution or to a period in which it occurred. So, yeah.
It sounds like some of them, though, are saying it's new.
Yeah. And change, you know?
Yeah. 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 What were you thinking, Ron?
Well, when I looked it up, I don't actually know what dictionary this is. It was just on my desktop. It's not one I typically use. But when I looked it up, it said a major change. The first thing that it showed, a major change, revolutionary.
The way they said it, you know, probably in their tone of voice, and they were looking happy and excited and things like that. So I probably just automatically assumed that they were seeing that as a positive change.
Absolutely. Sharon, in addition to PNDC, what other things have you been involved with over the course of your life that you'd like to talk about with your family, with whatever it is? We'd just love to hear more about you as a person. If you'd like to share some things with us about you, that'd be great.
Well, I can tell you that I think that I was given a variety of things so I would understand other people's experiences. Like I've had a friend that was a good friend, and for some unknown reason, that person turned on me. And I had a number of different things happen that felt hurtful that I didn't understand why they happened to me until the day when I thought, I could remember thinking, why would that woman stay with that husband when he would beat her and the children would see it? And I would have some of my own judgment about it. And I mean, I never had that kind of experience in my own life. No one in my family has. But what I did was I started to come to realize that there were judgments that I would make about people, and that some of my other experiences then would sort of counteract it. And I would realize the pain or perhaps the helplessness or the other reasons why someone might stay with someone who had been violent. Am I making sense to you?
Yes, absolutely.
And so I am ADD. I am dyslexic. I am obsessive compulsive. I don't have visual recall and I don't have name recall. So I had a funny thing happen one time when I was speaking at a conference, and a good friend who was taking a lot of classes with me who lived in Canada showed up at the conference, and I was surprised. And I had turned around to go pick up a box of something. Maybe it was more books to take back to the table after I'd spoken to this group. And to this day, I have to laugh at myself. But he's about 6 feet tall and I'm not. And so when I saw him there, I was really surprised. And I threw my arms around his waist and looked up at him and said, I don't know your name, but I know I love you. Everybody at the table heard it and started laughing. And I was like, oh my gosh. I even thought about writing something about the day in the life of an ADD person, because there are many ways that I find certain things difficult to get them done, to remember them, to do all of that. So I don't know if that's any answer to your question or not, but I think I came to conclusions that I was given certain difficulties in my own life to help me really take in more deeply how other people can be in a lot of pain and have reasons for being in that pain and even reasons for staying in that pain. Is that an answer to your...
Yeah. I mean, in some of the trainings that I've been doing over the last 5 years on in corporate America, in particular, talking about neurodivergence in the workplace and how the neurodivergent brain has each of us, I also have ADHD, our brains just are different. They function differently from a neurotypical person's brain. And so some of the benefits of that, if people can recognize them as such, especially in the workplace, which is novel solutions to problems and issues, not only just in the workplace, but just in our lives and in the world in general, right? And bringing a sense of accommodation to various degrees, right? In trying to understand, like, well, I have some challenges or I struggle with things. Well, what do other people struggle with? What are other people's challenges? And trying to think through a lot of people don't have the interest or the notion, right, to think through a lot of things in a way that's more systems oriented or multidisciplinary, or right, bringing in a lot of different ideas and experiences and voices and concepts, and then coming up with something that nobody else would have come up with because they don't have all of those intersecting experiences and ideas that have shown up in their life, right? So it makes sense that you would come up with this communication process, because when people get the book, they can read more about it. But even in your childhood, I remember you talking about, even in your childhood, there was something going on that you were able to absorb enough that once you were old enough, you could have more cognitive ability to recognize, oh, I think differently, or I speak differently, or I relate to people differently. And it wasn't a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't odd, or it led to the development of a really beautiful and very useful communication process.
Yes, yes, I think it's true. And I believe it increases empathy, and it brings people much more closely toward reciprocity. The impact of that, I mean, I think of us as having two different forms of communication. And one is unilateral power, which is a dominant submission kind of power. And the other is reciprocity, which is mutual. But in some of the other work I'm doing, and in a book that I'm going to be publishing one of these days, reciprocity has been very misunderstood. And so many people keep trying to be reciprocal when they're still being bossed around or being treated badly. And so that continued effort to be reciprocal when someone is treating you badly instead of setting limits makes life much more unpleasant, and it takes you directly to unilateral power, because then you become either the servant or you start to become in unilateral power yourself and get aggressive. So yeah, I think all of that is really significant. There's so many people who keep trying to be reciprocal when they're being treated rudely.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Sharon Ellison, who is the author of Taking the War Out of Our Words and creator of the powerful non-defensive communication process, also known by its acronym PNDC. Don't go away. We'll be back shortly after we play this commercial.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We're back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Sharon Ellison. Let's get back to the show.
You mentioned a forthcoming book.
The other book is actually just going to be fairly short. It's still going to cover some of the same ground, but it's going to cover some of the new ground, this whole piece about recognizing the value of the sixth second. And this book will also include things that I'm bringing up that are keeping us locked into power struggle. It's the necessary art of persuasion, persuading people. And if you win the argument, then there's all sorts of words that describe you as good and wonderful and successful. And if you don't, there are words that are impotent and useless. So that's a big piece of it. So there's some of those pieces that I didn't have in the other book that I want to be putting in this book and still making it very clear about the changes. I mean, that change in voice tone is huge. And I think I've never in my work described it until recently in a way that people might identify with it. Like, I haven't had something to say about why exactly does using a downtone make such a big difference? And how is that different from somebody saying, well, why did you say that? And so what I started thinking about was just some different ways to present it. And so I want to be able to explain a little bit more deeply, well, why does PNDC work? Why does this voice tone make the difference? And then bring in, there's a number of things that weren't in the book that I want to be saying, like this whole piece about the 6 second. That's life-changing. If enough people can say, okay, I'm going to wait for the 6 second. And he waited for, that's why this one example worked, because I could see him the way he was when other people were complaining. And then we could see the complete transformation in a man from acting as ugly as you could act to kindly offering you half of your money back. And so I want people to understand how and why it works. And the fact that if we can spread it fast enough, then it has the power to begin to be able to stop wars and all of the things. Unilateral power is still dominant. I'm invested in the more we can spread the impact of being able to communicate non-defensively. It doesn't mean you can't set boundaries when you need to set them, but when it's done in a way to punish and hurt and harm the other person and to take pleasure out of it, as long as that's there, we're never going to get anywhere as far as creating a wider band of peace through individuals and nations.
Absolutely. We've always needed this, but we sure could use it now more broadly. That's for sure. And yes, globally as
yes,
well.
I'm working with the group that I was working with, and we're going to try and help spread, because in the marches that people are doing them very peacefully. And we're going to try to set up something where we can be working and showing people how to deal in a similar way with your family members and your friends. Because when it's your family and friends, you're like, what the heck are you talking about? Or, you know, when you have any disagreement about a politician or anything else in life, and the person who disagrees with you is saying, how can you be so stupid or whatever, all it's going to do is create more alienation. So I would love to have people in the group I'm working with, and even anybody that wants to set up some kind of trainings about it, to be able to not get frustrated and angry, to be able to carry the kind of peaceful presence that has been happening in these marches. So that people can recognize, like even to just say simply, when X or Y is happening for me, this is what I would feel. So I think it's just harder for me to understand that you're seeing it in a very different way than I am. To be able to say it that way allows the other person to open up a block that's been there. How could you be so stupid? I'm not going to listen to anything you have to say to me.
Well, and On was mentioning disconnection, and you also talking about disconnection. What's really become, I don't know if it's popular, but it's happening at a more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's more common these days for people to promote on social media that they've gone, quote, hashtag no contact with mm-hmm. their family members. That's not just disconnection. That's estrangement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
That's that withdrawal, that isolation. And we know that that's a very poor recipe for mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, financial health. Right. It's isolation and withdrawal, this estrangement. It might feel good in the moment, but it's not going to be beneficial long term for these individuals.
Right. And that same person could be being entirely peaceful in a march. And so that's one of the things that I would like to be able to put through more to people, is to be able to have that same kind of kindness there, even if you're needing to say, I mean, it's hard for me to see this the way you see it, because this is the issue that's hard for me, or that's the issue that's hard for me. Keeping the focus on myself and not trying to get the other person, make the other person change. If we can do that and spread that fast enough, I was very excited. The Italians wanted me to do a Zoom training. And that's the nice part about Zoom is I can train people anywhere. They wrote back to me and said, can we invite people from other countries? And I'm like, yes. And so they did. And they sent me this big long list. There was even one or two countries in there that I couldn't pronounce the name of. But I mean, I'm in awe myself of the impact because it's so simple. I mean, a kid can learn it in even a matter of seconds. I've trained kindergarten kids. And in any time I've ever done any trainings for the kids, it's amazing how they pick it up. I was invited to speak to a class of third graders, and my ADD is going to jump in here. Does that make them 7 years old or 8 years old?
Second grade, 7 years old, typically, yeah.
They were third graders.
8 years old.
Years old, yeah.
About, yeah.
And so I did a 1 hour training for those 8-year-old kids. And then they asked me to come back a week later to just follow up and see how the kids were doing with it. And I asked if the kids were practicing it. And hands went up all over the room. And this one little girl talked as fast as she could possibly talk. She raised her hand and she said, well, my brother, he likes to hit me. He's 14 and he likes to hit me in the morning when we're eating breakfast and stuff. But I know he wants me to be his catcher when he practices baseball this afternoon. So I just told him, if you hit me this morning, I won't catch for you this afternoon. If you don't hit me, I'll catch for you. And he quit. That's how fast she was talking. And that's exactly what she said. And I mean, I have story after story with the kids being able to learn it. That's huge.
That's wonderful. Those little brains are just able to absorb so much. Yes. Well, Sharon, it's been great having you on the show. I feel like we could just keep talking and talking and talking. We're going to have you back on for a second episode in the near future to just get more information and talk about maybe some more details about this sixth second phenomenon and maybe hear some more stories and see where it goes. I'd love for you to tell the listener where they can find out more information about PNDC.
Well, my book still is selling very well on Amazon, and the full title is Taking the War Out of Our Words. And interestingly, I found out this after the book was published, but they forget the word our. So they'll say, oh, taking the war out of words. No, it's taking the war out of our words. And then the subtitle on the book cover is The Art of Powerful Non-Defensive Communication. And it was written in 1998. It's still going strong, and I'm very happy about that. I do have something else, though, to tell anybody who decides to buy the book. When I'm explaining how to make the change, I'm explaining how you ask questions, how you give the feedback, how you express your own feelings, and how you predict consequences. So you're getting an explanation of this piece, but you don't have this piece and this piece and this piece to see the whole storyline when I'm telling a story about it. Does that make sense? And so what I did was I made an index in the back of the book with over 100 examples in it. And in those examples, I give the reader all four of the pages that all four of the parts are on. So they can read that first part and learn it. And then they can just read the rest of the story. They don't have to go through all of the learning part of that. They can get the whole storyline. When people want to get the book or they're talking to me about it, I always tell them to be sure and look in the back of the book, because they can get a lot of synchronicity of seeing exactly the steps, how the process works, or looking up what they want to find themselves. And it's been delightful with you, Sander, because I think when we were together back in the day, I was just honored that you are still valuing that work so much.
I'm very glad that we reconnected and that we were able to have you on the show today. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right. Well, take good care. And it's nice to meet you too, Dr.
I'm very delighted to hear you speak. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, Sharon.
We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. Until next time, thank you for listening.